this show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back, Indie Comic Book Noise listeners. We're going to try and do some little bonus episodes for you. And who are we? We are, in this instance, Andrew the LA Rabbit and Phil.
Hey.
Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. We talk about all kinds of things that are not big two. We are sponsored by no one. We have a Facebook
page. Unless it's a crossover.
Yes.
There's loopholes.
There are loopholes. Well, that's sort of the mission statement, but we're not going to be hidebound.
Green Lantern and Planet of the Apes is on my eye.
You know, if it feels indie, that's what's really important to us. But you can find us on the Facebook, purportedly. You can definitely find us on Twitter, Indie Comic Book N. Phil and I both have individual Twitters, LA_Rabbit1, and Me and My Sloth for Phil. But this, as you heard from the warning at the beginning, sometimes we have a little bit of salty language in it, but I really don't think there's anything too terribly offensive, generally speaking, in the content.
Yeah, no.
I mean, that's just out of abundance of caution. And I know Phil joked we're never going to make it till 400 till December. but maybe with these little tiny episodes we can do it. I've been impressed into recording and editing now, so hopefully this thing will actually happen. And if not, Phil and I will have our voices lost to the ages.
You always think it's going to be lost when you do these, but it always turns out fine.
Well, there's some faith for you. Phil, do you want to go first with your selections?
Sure. Well, I've been reading a lot of European-type comics brought over here lately. I got these two hardcovers, which I think are about 80 pages each. It's one of like those type. And they're originally in France, I think, from about 4 years ago or so, by Jean-Luc Istin and Eli Benetti, he's Italian, the other guy's French. And basically it's a modern rewrite of the film Night of the Living Dead. And right from the start, it's kind of an insult because they explain the whole zombie virus in the first couple pages, and that's one of the rules of those films is you don't explain. And other than that, it's kind of like just a cash-in on the name, because it's not a modern retelling at all. It's just its own zombie story. The only thing that's similar is the title and the fact that there's a brother and sister at a graveyard in one scene at the beginning. But that being said, as far as zombie tales go, it's actually really, really good. The art is amazing. Like most Italian artists are pretty good. And it's just like it's very typical zombie story. Like you've seen this all before. Basically, it's the brother and sister are trapped in this hotel while the zombie invasion's going on. While the rest of her family, you see pages of them trying to survive, like her two little kids and a husband. And it's like I say, it's all typical stuff, but It's a really well-done zombie story, and I'll definitely be collecting the rest of these as they go on, but it's hard to get these kind of books sometimes because unless you're actually like looking out for them, you might miss them, or they're not always at the comic store. I got these at Chapters, which I guess would be... I don't think you have Chapters in the States, eh?
No, or if we do, we don't have it in this area. Do you know who the publisher is on these?
Well, the Canadian publisher and, well, North American publisher is Firefly. But the original publisher, I don't know, because it's like it just came out now, but it's came out like 4 years ago in France.
Well, a lot of times I think they also have to wait for translations and things like that that can backlog that stuff. Because I assume you read it in English, I would imagine.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. And reading this makes me want to pick up more European comics again. Because a lot of the ones I've read, I've really enjoyed, I found. Like, there's some of them could be a little boring and wordy and stuff, but there's a lot of just great, great ones out there. Like, Humanoids usually publishes a lot of them, really good ones.
Well, as I've remarked before my love of Pat Mills. I know he, mm-hmm. I think, releases a lot of his through France as well. My understanding okay. is the artist protections and rights and everything you get as a French mm-hmm. comic book person is superior to a lot of other countries, and I think that's why a lot of the artists base themselves in France.
Mm-hmm. The only shitty thing is, though, is their format that they do. You get such small chunks, and then you got to wait a long time for the next small chunk. That kind of sucks. Because now I have no clue when I'm going to get the third book, because they're only like 80 pages each, right? So,
well, 80 pages is a good, it's better than a floppy, you know?
Yeah, because the second book just came out. So in the first book before that was like a year ago, I think, or something. So it's probably going to be a while.
Well, I've my theme for this episode is what would Phil do?
Oh, nice.
As I've been doing, and I have a couple of selections from C2E2, which I mm-hmm. talked about on our sister show Marvel Noise, where you can also hear myself, Super Steve, and Kevin usually. Phil used to be on, but his disdain for Marvel has grown.
He's kicked me off. Not mature enough.
So I wanted to talk about a book that Phil previously mentioned from Action Lab, and that's Voracious.
Oh, nice.
As
one of my favorite titles from this year or last year. I forget when it came out, but that was, that's definitely one of my favorite titles in a while.
So at the show, they had a couple of the guys were there. Jason, Murr, and Moore, Murr, and Marcusan. And so I picked up the first trade, and they signed it for me.
And you sent me an awesome first issue signed by them, too, which thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I figured I told them you turned me on, so the least I could do was get a signed issue. They've started the second series.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm very excited to read.
How far into it they are. I just grabbed the first because it was a completed trade, so I'm like, oh, I like getting this. And mm-hmm. I think what they actually do, if I remember, or what they used to do, I don't know if they still do, is they used to just get the issues bound.
That's what they do still. Yeah, you get all the ads, all the original issue, yeah.
Which I think is actually pretty clever. I mean, what happens, weirdly enough, I think because of, it ends up being like slightly smaller. By slightly, mm-hmm. I mean like a centimeter smaller than a regular trade, I think, because of how they bind it together, but you don't really get any kind of significant gutter loss or anything. So yeah. You get a little bit. I'm not going to be
too much. I'm looking at one right now.
But, well, it depends on the page, too. Like, yeah, the ones that go right to the border, you do lose. But I'm talking, like I said, it's a centimeter or something. So you're not, mm-hmm. it's not like that one trade where I was so visibly angry. Because it was a fancy hardcover and I lost what I felt was a significant amount. There really isn't too much on that inside. And if you really bend it back, you can see it. But I think it's a smart use of the old floppies. And
yeah.
I don't find there's any drop-off in the quality, like I said, except for a very minor gutter loss. But this is, again, Marcusan Nasso and Jason Murr. M-U-H-R. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. And then the color art by Andre Tabakuri. And this is the story of a chef who suffered a terrible fire where he loses his everything. His sister, his restaurant, and it just shakes him to his core, so he returns to his small rural town to just work in this dive coffee shop. But when he gets there, he hooks up with his old childhood friend, lady friend. I mean, they're not boyfriend and girlfriend, but she has a crush on him,
I think, yeah.
Which is, and so that's going to play out. Plus, he has a aunt who looks after him.
And did you say he's Native American?
I didn't mention that. Yeah, he's Native American. Yeah. So it turns out that he had this uncle that he barely remembered who died and left him everything in his estate. So it's a good chunk of money, and he has this property way out off the county line where you gotta, you know, take a motorcycle or four-wheel or to get way out there off the grid type of thing. And he goes inside and finds out that the guy had built these time travel suits. But they're kind of specific rules, like the suits just go to this particular era.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't understand that much, but he tries it out, and it turns out it goes back to the time of the dinosaurs. And when he's playing around, he has to defend himself from a dinosaur, and there's a built-in kind of flamethrower laser torch thing, so he ends up inadvertently kind of cooking the dinosaur. And then when he smells how good it is, he eats it.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you? I guess. I mean, it seems mm-hmm. a little risky, if you want my opinion.
It's just, it's such an original take for a story, I find.
So I was like, well, he eats it and he likes it. And so then he's like, he's a chef. So he drags the dinosaur back mm-hmm. to the return portal. And then taking the money he was left, he opens up a restaurant in this small town. And he's serving dinosaur cuts.
And I love how every issue has recipes for some of his dinosaur meals.
So it's a meanwhile, there's also the interpersonal tension of opening the new restaurant. His childhood friend who has a crush on him. Her brother is a police officer who doesn't like the chef, and he's going to investigate because he's like, how did this guy get all this money? Like, the uncle story just sounds suspicious. So he's mm-hmm. plugging into the backstory of the uncle. Plus, additionally, the chef has a sort of girl, on and off again, girlfriend from New York who's coming out to visit. So,
and a bodyguard kind of too, doesn't he?
Yeah, there's a older gentleman that's like a family friend who was in the military.
And he kind of watches out for him a bit and stuff.
Right. He's the only one he tells about the time travel
mm-hmm.
because of his military skills. He can go back in and help him, you know, shoot the dinosaurs and capture them. And then it ends with a very little funny button at the end where it turns out that, and it's like three pages, that maybe this isn't so much a time travel as it goes to an alternate Earth.
Yeah.
So you get a two-page splash of a world run by dinosaurs set in the future, and there's all these missing, and they're like dinosaur policemen, and they're worried about these missing...
It just pop out of time, almost.
Like. Dinosaurs, yeah. And so it ends on this, like, sort of a anthropomorphized triceratops. Like, mm-hmm. he's got the head, but he has, two arms and two legs. They don't run around that way. And he's got to investigate these missing...
Yeah, because the cook is basically causing genocide by taking the ancestors of these dinosaurs and eating them. Like, cooking them up.
Which is pretty clever. I mean, I don't know how many he's doing, but clearly we have no reason to think that the chef or any of those people realize what's going on. Like, I didn't realize. There was no clues I found in the thing. So it's going to be interesting. Plus, there's some backstory with the uncle and his aunt and everything, and it just was well paced, I thought, well doled out. I can see why you liked it. It's a nice mix of a clever premise and, like I said, the interpersonal drama.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, if you
get the second mini is about the dinosaurs going after him,
and you can find, like, they do have little, like, some sketches in the book, and, like you said, the recipes. So all in all, I thought it was a good trade. Is
And beautiful
$15.
Art. Nice and clean. Like, I just found the art and the colors, like, nice and bright. Like, I just thought it had a great look and feel in your hand.
Yeah, I mean, it is four issues, but $15, mm-hmm. I feel, is more than for the extras you get thrown in.
And it's a good read. Like, it's not like there's lots of pages with nothing to read or anything.
No, and all the balance and everything. So, yeah, I can see why you like it. I would totally recommend people pick this up. I also enjoy when you can get it right from the people that work on it. You know, that's a fun.
Well, that was a big bonus getting it signed,
It was just so random that I was walking through the artist's alley, and I'm like, wait, Voracious. Hey, isn't that the book, Phil?
And I guarantee that'll be the best thing what's that company called? God damn it.
Action Lab?
Yeah, Action Lab will ever put out. I think that's going to be the best book.
I'm not going to go that far. They've got a lot of good books. I mean,
they do. Oh, I love their books. I collect all their stuff.
We both
even collect their bad books.
they even have an ad for a book we both picked up, Ginger Dead Man.
Let's
sit in here.
Thanks.
But, kind of surprised me about Action Lab is how quickly they've expanded their roster. Like, I used to think of them as, you know, they had the Princeless book, and then they got the NFL license, and they always had a good stable, but you kind of turn around and you're like, they have a lot of books.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, I noticed in the last few previews, there's only, like, a few issues coming out, so I don't know if they're getting ready to relaunch a bunch of other ones, but it's kind of dwindled a bit.
Well, I think some of these guys, it's their one, they have their one thing, and then when that either runs out or they get something else or move on or whatever, I think it's, I don't know that they are necessarily going to jump to something else. Like, when you finish your one property, whatever it is, Ginger Dead, well, that's a license, so it's a bit different. But when you finish, I don't know, the, what's that one where they're...
Puppet Master?
The baking one. No, no, one of the non-licensed ones. I was trying to think where...
I know the one you mean, Sugar and Spice or something.
Or same with, like, Ghoul Scouts or something. Like, once you finish that, you may not be jumping.
Well, that's the series, a miniseries. I don't know if the second one came out yet, but there is a second one for that.
Well, also...
Have you read Ghoul Scouts?
No, but I know that Steve Bryant, one of the creators on it, also is doing his Athena Voltaire.
Oh, okay.
So that's going to replace that, unless they get a different art. You know, they could switch up the art team. But with a lot of these books...
I've never read that one.
I think it's linked to the particular people. The licensed books are side, but you know what I mean? So once Ghoul Scouts, I don't know if you own it, if you're going to let someone else work on it type of thing. I don't know how that works or if the demand is there. But I backed a Kickstarter for Athena Voltaire. It's been around for quite a while, so he has a nice bulk of material. It's nice when you work on the same character for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You can package these groupings in. So with the Kickstarter, I ended up getting a lot of the... I think the entire thing up to whenever that Kickstarter came out. Which was very cool. I like getting the whole run through different publishers or whatever. I don't know where Athena Voltaire, if it's coming out through. It might be coming out through Action Lab, for all I know.
And that's one you really like? Like, that's, I've never picked that one up.
I enjoyed it. It's like kind of Indiana Jones and meets Laura Croft. Well, because she's a lady. So, I don't know if you ever read Airboy. In some ways, it reminds me in the look, kind of the brunette pilot from Airboy, who was a, you know, switched over from the other side. That's not this character. She's more of like the archaeologist, adventurer, sort of a Lady Indiana Jones style, if I remember correctly. Although it has been years since I read it. I don't know. If I see just the new series, I'll pick it up.
Yeah, I just remembered the Airboy I read was the James Robinson one with all the Wang.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
That was a great
Airboy. I like that one a lot.
That was not traditionally.
No, that's not traditionally Airboy. But yeah, that's my experience with Airboy. I have some of the older issues, but I never read them.
And it looks like it is going to come out from Action Lab, thanks to the internet. Because they ran a Kickstarter this year. And so they're going to... Looks like they pulled in almost 10,000. So yeah. So you can go to the Kickstarter and you'll see pages of the art and look at the characters and everything, and that will give you, even though the Kickstarter is over, at least give you a kind of a feel for what it looks like. But I have like the older stuff of that, the compendium and all that. So yeah, I liked it. I thought it was good reading at the time. And I would,
did you pick up any other comics by them while you were there?
No, I saw they had a few others, but it was kind of crowded. When I think I saw them on Saturday.
Well, if you don't like crowds, you're at the wrong place. You know that, right?
Well, but Friday was really very reasonable for C2E. It's just Saturday, that show has jumped to...
That's the busiest day always.
To let's become a like... It was always a real show, but it's
gotten, well, that's what the day pass people go. That's why it's
a lot more substantial. I mean, it was crazy. Because I was there 2 years ago or whatever, and it was busy, but not like this. Just all these pop culture things are really getting out of hand.
Yeah. Well, that's why I don't like going to cons as much anymore, because the photo ops were fun at first, but now that's all cons are becoming, is just the new TV shows and movie people, you know, like Walking Dead people, Game of Thrones, that kind of thing. Where I want the indie comics that I can't pick up at the store, or the horror movies, you know, the indie horror movies I can't pick up places.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot. I'm glad I went, but Friday and Sunday were much better. I mean, as they always are, but it was a noticeable. I mean, it was feeling at some points like I was back at San Diego. Like, that's how bad that Saturday crowd
was. Well, I bet, yeah, they're so popular now.
I mean, that's ridiculous. So I was just jammed in, you know, and you can't move anywhere, and you feel like everybody's running this way and that way. And also, I think I might have been on my way somewhere or something, just happened to notice the big voracious thing. It was in kind of, and yeah, I wanted to
get so happy you picked that up.
An issue for you and everything. So I was like, oh, well, let's do that. And then sometimes I also feel like I've spent enough time at a table or someone's talking to somebody else or that type of thing. And you always feel like just kind of want to do my transaction and get out.
That's what I like about you, though. You listen to what we like, and then you always go out of your way to pick up those things. Or like when you send us your comic care packages, it's always stuff tailored, you know, to what you've heard us talk about and stuff. It's really cool.
Well, you know, you gotta, I listen to what you guys
say. I can't remember anything you like.
I mean, if I see that, of course I'm going to try it out. I always listen to what you guys, the only one I don't run into as much is a lot of Kevin's stuff. Cause he gets a lot of like the Canada
really specific stuff. Yeah. And like I have your, that Flinch issue you sent me on my fireplace. Because I'm such a big fan of the Flinch ones. I'm surprised you gave me that one because it's Bill Willingham and you collect all this stuff, I thought.
No, I've really gotten... I did pick up at C2E2 the new... He's doing one with Santos. Lark's Killer.
Okay, and I haven't seen that.
They've been doing it each show. They have like a convention exclusive, but it's really the same with just a different badging. So I picked that up because I like Santos and I like Willingham, but I don't know. Some of that Dynamite stuff he was doing when he first moved over, he did that kind of steampunky one, and it just,
okay,
it wasn't bad or anything, but it didn't blow my skirt up, as they say. So I was like, I guess I'll get it if I like it. Those Dynamite titles are always a risk, though.
Yeah, I find Dynamite's getting a little better, though, because I was pretty hard on them, but I'm starting to enjoy their stuff a bit again, some of it.
Oh, I've enjoyed stuff. It just, I don't know, I feel like it's a real, they do a lot of kind of baiting and switching, it feels like. Yeah. And they're,
the Vampirella's good. It's going really good, but it's weird, but it's good.
And some of their art choices also don't thrill me always.
Well, that's why I like the Vampirella, because it was a change. It was much better than, some of the stuff that you've seen before. Like, it's more of an indie look, even.
Also, they're really, even when I was reading their solicit, the last book of theirs, I think, might have been one of those cheap, you know, 35-cent issues or whatever. And I noticed it in all the promotions. It's almost always focused on the writer still, which is good, and they're getting big profile names, but, man, you can't ignore, like...
By any chance, was that 35-cent issue Sword Quest?
Dude. I picked it up. Yeah, I don't know if I've read it yet, but I know it. And I
was excited for it.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, Sword Quest. Phil talked about this. So I did pick that up, but I haven't gotten to that one yet. I feel embarrassed.
Well, it's only 25 cents. It's a short issue. You can fit it in sometime.
Oh, no, I did. Didn't we talk about that?
Nope,
we talked
not
about
yet.
We haven't? Okay, I do remember reading
it. I was going to wait to talk about it until the first issue came out.
Okay. Because I do remember reviewing, and I was like, oh yeah, this was... I also felt... that one, it was a lot of weird... I don't know, I think they could have cut through some of the setup a little fat. Like, you're either going to buy into this or you're not. You don't need to belabor the setup.
Yeah.
It's a pretty goofy premise, so just go with
it. But that's why it's a zero issue.
Yeah.
Because that's how usually zero issues are never that anything that important, you know. It's just more setup that you're going to get anyway. But that's always been an interesting, like, real life story, you know, about that sword. But at the same time, who knows? It could be. It seems kind of depressing too, because he has cancer, I think, or something.
Yeah, that's the motivating thing to get him to do things. But yeah, you're right. That's not a cheery way. I mean, they could just have him have a weird bug up his butt about seeing what's going to happen.
Yeah. So, something else I read, another European comic. Did you ever watch a lot of subtitle movies?
I went through a bit of a phase of that, but my movie watching has dropped quite a bit lately with TV, comics, and video games kind of picking up the slack.
Well, the first two subtitle movies I ever saw, I rented them at the same time when Blockbuster was around still, and it got me into subtitle and foreign films was Emily, you know that movie?
Oh yeah, I
And
remember that.
also this other one called Devil's Backbone. That's the Del Toro one. It's like a Spanish orphanage ghost story. Awesome movie. Anyway, one of the writers of that, David Munoz, and another Spanish artist did this book called Whispers in the Walls. This is done by humanoids. And basically it's about a little girl whose family was killed by vampires. And she's in this like orphanage in the middle of nowhere now with a bunch of other kids. And it's this like creepy tale why the kids are trying to figure out why they're locked up and stuff. And it turns out they all have this monster curse because they survived like a monster attack kind of thing. And it's about this big war between the monsters and these druids trying to wipe each other out. And it's just this awesome one and done tale. Like you can tell this guy writes movies because it's this would totally be a cool movie. But yeah, it's just their war that's going on, and it's beautiful art, very beautiful art. The Italians and Spanish people, I think they're my favorite artists.
Yeah, I've got no. Well, the French too are good too. I mean,
Well, the French, I like the writing. I seem to like a lot of their stories. But because the French have more of a, don't they have more of a cartoony feel usually?
they can, but they can also go lush. I guess you're right. I'd more think of the Italians probably when I think of that,
Yeah, it's
lush
just their
European
detail.
style.
Like, it's just their detail is so amazing. Like, I think that's going to be my next kick is trying to get more of these books, type of books.
Well, there are a few. Usually, I end up getting a lot of mine through heavy metal, believe it or not. I don't know if
I
they
like
still
heavy
do
metal
it.
stuff. Well, yeah, they have their own comic line, like floppies now. Or I don't
Really?
know if they're coming out, but they did. Yeah, one of my favorite titles from Dark Horse, The Paybacks. I guess it didn't do well enough at Dark Horse, and so Heavy Metal picked it up, and they did the next four issues,
Yeah, it's
which
fine
is
that
awesome.
they. Because they'll collect a lot of that European stuff. So, I mean, the trades are of. Those are ones that are. You have to be a little bit careful and take a look and see if the bindings are good and everything. I feel like sometimes they're a little beat up. But this also. They've been through so many management changes and everything. I'm a little bit hesitant to speak too much because I know they recently retooled and added Grant Morrison and all that stuff. So maybe it's a new. Maybe it's a new day. I don't want to tar them with an old brush.
I get the magazine sometimes. It depends because it always has a theme, so it just depends what it's about. Because it's not like it used to be where it was all people getting fucked and shit. Like now it's actually good sci-fi anthologies and stuff.
Yeah, I had a subscription maybe about 3 years ago for a few years, and it was good, but I just found myself. You're right. It was so. In those days, it was really up and down. Like there'd be a great issue, and then there'd be an issue that was all just lukewarm TNA.
Yeah, like the Little Nemo takeoff of the girl that was getting sexually assaulted pretty much everywhere she went. That was one of the ongoing ones, like just weird stuff.
So I found that I wasn't just reading. I don't think I was. Reading the issues as much as just kind of flipping through and looking at the art half the time. And I'm like, you know, I don't think I need this sent to my house constantly. And also, it
No.
just ends up, I'm trying to be more responsible about space and paper, and I really need to do another big purge.
Yeah, it's pretty high quality though now. I would recommend it compared to how it used to be.
Tell you, Phil, if you were a lot more local, you'd have a lot more comic books.
I'd fucking take them all. Can never have enough comic books, and you probably have a lot I'd want.
And a lot you wouldn't. There's a lot of Marvel and nonsense tucked in there.
I read a lot
That,
of that stuff too, but I have a lot of that stuff.
yeah,
Marvel and DC.
that's kind of the problem with that glut of like when I was buying a lot of Marvel floppies a few years ago. You just end up with this thing, and then you're like, what am I going to do with all these?
Yeah. There's some stuff I reread, but it's more the indie stuff I reread, I find. But
I also found, I don't know, that Marvel Unlimited app thing. Mm-hmm. I wish more publishers had that. Sometimes I'll just go on and just kind of browse and end up reading this, that, or the other thing. And if any other publisher wanted to do that, I'd pay money for their backlog. It just is a fun way to let yourself go, and wherever the kind of you read, whatever title catches your eye at that moment. Mm-hmm. It just, if I was more organized, it'd be different, but I have a hard time. Like, if I want to find something, I either find it in 2 seconds or I'm never going to find it. Like, it is either where I remember, or if it isn't, give it up, Sanford. Like, you're going to be going through boxes and piles of comics.
There's so much stuff I want to reread, but I just know it'd be impossible for me to gather the issues because they're not in order.
Yeah, same here. They're all randomly.
Every time I put them in order, they just somehow end up messed up again.
Well, also, I have that, like I said, sometimes it works, and I'm like, oh, it's in this box or this pile. But every year or so, you know, you do a bit of a kind of half-ass reorganizing.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, no, I moved it from there. And then you're like, oh, it's gone.
That's why I like the trays better, because they're a lot easier to find.
And those I can put on, like, bookshelves easier, and then you just see the
put your favorites up, you know? Yeah.
But even there, I'll be honest with you, I've frequently thought it was on this bookshelf, and then it's not, and then I'm like, oh, no, I have no idea.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure I have, like, 500 trays at this point. It does get a little hard to find things once you get to that point.
Well, also, I do have some in the short boxes and everything, too. And then you're like, oh, no. Yeah, I need to do a big... But my problem is when I start reorganizing, I'll be good for like 10 minutes and then I'll start reading something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'll be like, oh, wow. And then before you know it, I've spent an hour reading comics and I have just piles of crap everywhere.
That's just it, because you come across your hidden gems that you haven't seen in a long time. And that's a big plus of it.
And every once in a while, it'll be like, you know, I don't know if I ever read this, and then you end up ducking into that.
Yeah, I have tons of indie stuff I haven't read that I bought like in 25-cent bins when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's the fun adventures of being irresponsible with all your junk.
Mm-hmm.
But also at C2E2, Phil, I slipped something in your package. I'm sure you noticed a little catalog, perhaps.
Oh, Xenoscope, yeah.
So when I went by their booth, I'm like, you know what? It's time to give them a fair shot again. So I asked the dude, I'm like, what's like your favorite book?
See, I would have recommended to you Wonderland.
Oh, this guy recommended Neverland.
So okay, I enjoyed the first book of that too. Yeah.
So I picked up, and that's Joe Brucia, pencils Jean-Paul Deschong, colors Jason Embry, letters Jim Campbell and Sean DePasquale. And as like as always with these things, like the cover artists are going to be different than the interiors.
See, this is when I liked Xenoscope at this point in the universe, before it got all muffled up.
And it's also nice at the back they include like a bunch of different covers that they used. Like the issue zero cover is like a big gatefold one. I can't imagine they included all the different covers, because they only have a few, and I know they're one that does a lot. But it's nice to get the covers, but what was fun is some of the covers are actually by the interior artist, which tells you that the interior artist isn't as huge a jump-off. I mean, only, I think, one or two of them, but still. It was, sometimes they have these very kind of lush covers, and then the interiors are a lot more sparse. This one, you know, like I said, the guy was good enough to do a cover, so...
Yep.
This is turning it on its head, and in this one, Peter Pan is like some kind of vampiric, nasty overlord type.
Yeah.
And Tinkerbell is also a sort of vixen. I mean, they have the same tension about her being in love with him and him not being so much.
But they're evil.
Yeah. So they have that dynamic they kept. But what happens is Hook in this one is one of the boys that he had went to kidnap and sort of drain his essence, but escaped. So, and then there's some And then they're back. He's back in the real world as just like a homeless person who's having a hard time getting by. But when a couple of new young boys are kidnapped, and he knows the MO, he's like sucked into helping, because he's not doing well in the real world. So this is his way to redeem himself, to go face down Peter Pan and Tank. But like I said, I like the twist. Like I said, I really appreciate that they kept the kind of... It was always a weird thing, even as a kid, the sort of Peter Pan and Tinkerbell relationship. Mm-hmm. And then, like, she's kind of jealous of Wendy, but they're all kind of kids. Yeah. I don't know. That was, like, a fun...
But she's so small, the most she could do is fit in his dick hole. Like, what are they going to do together?
She could massage his prostate, Phil.
That's true.
I mean she could really get in there and give a two-handed massage. Yeah. But, so, it's just a... Like, so, that seems suited to Xenoscope's kind of weird... There's some... I don't know if... Maybe I'm reading too much into some light kind of bondage themes as well into this thing. And mm-hmm. Yeah, just that kind of Xenoscope. Let's have kind of sexy adult fairy tales, but not... There's nothing in here that's like...
No, there never is.
It's like
I know you guys have that in your mind, but there's never titty covers. You always used to say they have titty covers. They don't. It's never... There's like you never see any sex scenes in these comics. No.
Like I said, I would put it maybe PG-13, and that's more due to the violence.
Mm-hmm. It's like, more just horror. Like, it's more like they have horror themes.
And, like, I think there's kind of the suggestion a little bit, too. But it's never anything so saucy that you're gonna...
Yeah. Like, I can't remember one issue where anyone's fucked.
Well, you got that for you. But, yeah, I don't think anything like that would be... hinted at off panel, but this was fun. I mean, I don't know that, like, it was a fine one and done, and part of it was they were running.
Oh, it's not one and done.
Oh, well, for me, it's one and done.
Yeah, that's just the beginning. But yeah, for me, I would suggest pick up the original trilogy of Wonderland. That's what kind of got me into it all too, and for me, it's always been my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fine. I don't know, but it just, I liked it, but it wasn't anything where I was hankering to run back mm-hmm. and pick more up, but I'm not unpleased, and
yeah.
I think they were running it on sale. I don't know. Not a big steep, but it's only $16 for the trade, so it's not like...
Yeah, what got me into them is it was my first con ever, Fan Expo, and they were very new, I guess, still, and they had this small old booth in the middle of, like, of all the people with knickknacks and stuff. And they had all their trades there for $5. So I saw them one day. I just passed kind of by. And then I couldn't get it out of my head, so I went back the next day and I bought every trade, like 20 of them or something like that, for $5 each. And they gave me some for free, too, because I bought so many. And then after that, I was kind of hooked. But I'm not really into them as much anymore because it's really gotten – it's just not the same at all anymore. But at the same time, this new stuff might be kind of getting back into what I like a bit.
I do appreciate how you always go big. Like, if you're going to try something, yeah. You just don't buy an issue. You, like, I'm buying
No, I want it all. Yeah, I have to have it all. Because that was kind of my chance, too, you know? Like,
no, it was a good... I mean, $5 a trade, you're not beating that. So it was a good deal.
I got the three Wonderlands, the Tale from the Wonderland, two books. I got Grimm Fairy Tales, a bunch of those trades. However, it was up to 6 maybe or 7. And I forget. I think that was it.
Well, Phil, have you got anything else for us?
We got a lot of like one and dones kind of thing, but like the new Vampirella series Vampblade. Remember the ones you read weren't very good. Well, yes. The season 2 ones started coming out, and it seems like it's back in form. It's good again. Compared to the one you read there, but the only difference is this time when she vamps out, like to hunt the alien things, now the costume takes control, so she kind of zones out. I don't know if I like that aspect too much, because it takes away a lot of the comedy and stuff. So that's my only complaint. And the new Youngblood, I read that by Image, by Chad Bowers and Jim Toe.
Really? How was that?
I really liked it, actually. I'm holding my hand right now and the pages are stuck together. I swear to God, I did not jerk off reading this. But well, it kind of had a Powers feel because this first storyline, like there's these young heroes going out and one of them gets killed out or something like that. So it kind of has that feel to the first storyline of Powers. And it's the old team, not the old team, sorry, but the team that they've been using lately with like Rocket and Lady Supreme, those kind of characters. But there's a new Vogue, the old Shaft ends up coming back, and Bad Rock is in really bad shape, like he's hooked up to a machine because he's dying or something like that. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. If Rob Liefeld doesn't do it, it usually the Youngblood stuff's not that bad.
Find. So if the creator and guy behind it isn't,
yeah, yeah, then other people, yeah, end up doing a pretty good job.
I don't know what that says about Rob Liefeld. So it doesn't feel like the original one from the night. So it's like the
not at all
Prophet, no. And Glory and all those other reboots where they
exactly, yeah, the Prophet the best.
I think sure. That's smart to like not. I don't know, because I feel like you can't go back to that. No one's really clamoring. Although, I guess he did a new Deadpool graphic. I didn't read it, but...
Yeah,
I thought I saw some advertisement that Rob Liefeld was working on. Some kind of... I think it was a graphic novel or something. It wasn't anything...
It's not going to be good, though.
That grabbed me. Because I don't know, the Deadpool seems almost... A character like Wolverine, kind of like, that was created, but what's made the character endure has gone past his roots.
Yeah.
In a way. So, not to knock. Obviously, the creator is important. I'm not trying to diminish their contribution, but it feels like what really got people into the character is what they did after it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And one last thing. I picked up the Pink Panther Super Pink Special by American Mythology, which was a company that started to catch my eye. They also do Rocky and Bullwinkle, Casper, and Underdog coming out. And the funny thing is, they have another title I'm going to talk about in another episode, but one of their first titles that's still going is something like Vampire Orgy something. like to have these kid properties. Well, they're not really kid properties because they're from when we were young, right? So it's all adults reading it.
But, yeah, they're even stuff from Underdog. I think it's from like the 60s or something.
Yeah, so it's not like kids will probably be reading these, but it's just so funny that that's their flagship book. but yeah, this Pink Panther one is pretty cool. The first story was like Mad Magazine type art and just him using all these different powers, like he can change his power up, so it's a cool him going after like robbers. And the other ones are just superhero tales too. I would never pick up another Pink Panther book, but I did enjoy the special though. But I definitely got my fill. Underdog's coming out soon. I might pick up the first issue of that, and I might try Rocky and Bullwinkle and Casper too. Just the first issues, though. I don't think it's something I would go forward afterwards. But yeah, the other comic I'm going to talk about in a later episode is Hatchet, which is a movie series. They picked up the license for that.
It is fascinating now how it seems like a lot, there's a ton of licensed properties, but they're all with different companies. You know, Action Lab has some.
Small ones, too.
IDW has one. This company, like, they're not. There's not one place you go anymore to get the...
Nope.
I get those. And Marvel and DC, unless it's a Marvel or DC property, they seem kind of right out of it.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, DC does like Lost Boys, stuff like that. So they have a few.
But are those Warner Brothers movies, though? I always assumed.
Yeah, you're right. You're probably right.
That was because now they're owned by these giant media companies that have enough of their own.
Yeah, they buy a lot of companies out.
So it's a weird, but it's nice. I would say if you're a small publisher, think about pitching these because it's not like.
And there's Action a lot Labs coming out is a, that I'm loving.
Is a, you know, they're a big company, but they're not a huge company. And I think if you can make a good pitch, just like think outside and find some property that's not being done and. Maybe you can...
And they're doing that because I'm getting comics I thought I would never get to read, like, Trancers, those movies. Like, I can't believe they made a comic book of that. Like it's like I'm getting my wish of a lot of horror movies. A lot of those properties are getting picked up. Like, stories that I wouldn't get anywhere else now.
And why not have those things be the tent pole to build your company around, you know?
Yep.
You can do one or two this indie comic titles.
Copy of them, yeah.
And then use that one to get in. Plus, they might have some better promotion ideas. Like, maybe you could... I know some of those video game comics end up tying into, like, Dark Horse and them do them, but they also sometimes get sold through video game stores or other sort of outlets like that.
Well, it looks like MGM owns Pink Panther. So that's who they made a deal with for them. Do they own Underdog and Casper and stuff, too? Do you know?
I do not know. I thought Casper would have been with all them other titles, and I thought... Because MGM, I think they're also... Their big thing, I think, is James Bond.
Okay, Rock and Bull is Ward Productions, and Casper is Harvey.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're getting licenses all over the place. And Underdog is, I don't know, Classic Media, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Some of these things I'm sure have, especially the ones that don't have a lot of activity. Like, when's the last, I can't think of that. I'm sure there was probably a movie or TV show reboot of Underdog at some point in the last 20 years.
There was a live action.
Okay.
There was a live action, yeah. With the My Name is Earl guy, I think.
But it's not like it's the hottest property on the block or anything. But yeah, it's a smart move. It gets the fans of the thing going, and that gives you a baseline of sales, and maybe you can leverage that into something else.
But I feel like it's a lot of people like me that would just read the first issue just for old time's sake, you know, but then I don't see them being long-lasting series at all.
No, but the point is, like, say I knock it out of the park, and you're like, man, Andy can really write or draw or what, you know, whatever element I'm bringing to it. Then maybe if I have another book or put an ad in for my book of like, oh, hey, I've got a new book coming out of my own property, The Adventures of Silly Man or whatever. And you'll be like, well, I did
and
like
quality's his, good.
Yeah, I did like his art, writing, whatever, pacing, all that. Maybe I'll try out his book. Like, it's a advertisement, not just for the industry, but for readers. To be like, this guy really is good. Like, I like, this is where I'm, I can see me buying into it.
Do you have any last ones?
No, I think I'll, I mean, I have a few, but I think I'd like to wrap this up. I want to keep this one short on the off chance that you dear listeners,
people, so they don't have to wait so long anymore.
Yeah, never end up, well, I just also want to make sure it actually recorded in a good day.
This is technically going to be episode 400, but we're not going to number it. But in our hearts, we all know that it was me and Andrew that did episode 400.
Well, I would like 399 to be put on the internet at some point. Yeah. But
I guess this might be 399.
Well, no, because I think unless we re-record the intro, that one was.
Oh, that's true.
But you're right. This might come out before that one. I don't know.
Yeah. But, that's why we'll call it a bonus.
Yeah. We'll see how this works. If this is a good system and we get feedback from you, the loyal listeners, that this is something you guys like, then I'll maybe we'll do a bunch of these little ones. Yeah. Where we keep it short and sweet, and that way we can rotate and have...
Yeah, if we can't get the whole crew organized.
Right. We can do with different people or maybe bring on a guest star. I know Kevin was going to try and maybe line some people up for a big 400.
We can't even get Kevin on. He ain't lining up shit.
Well, that's because he's busy now selling. He's become the mile high of Canada. It's all about making those dollar bills for him.
Corporation started.
He's got to sell.
Selling all his good stuff, though.
Well, there's more of that. I think he's buying.
Worried he's going to get too addicted to selling and just stop reading it.
He's already that way looking at variant cover.
Yeah, I know.
He's our young Kevin has grown up and become a full-fledged mercenary. But until all the indie comic book noise crew stop reading comics, keep watching the skies and keep reading those indie books.